Hi, I'm Lauren McLean, and welcome to Mentoring Nature Connections. I'd like to start by taking a moment to acknowledge the unceded and traditional territories we each find ourselves on today. For me, I live on Heritage Mountain in Port Moody, British Columbia. To the east of me is the Golden Ears Provincial Park, and when I look over to the west, I can see the Burrard Inlet, which feeds into the Pacific Ocean. This is the land of the Kwikwetlem First Nations. Today's episode is all about outdoor play, both the possibilities and the challenges. To help us dig into this area, we have Claudine Mossberg with us. She is a mom of three, a wife, and an outdoor adventurer. When she realized so many people wanted to be outdoors, but they may not know how to get there, it was clear to her that her knowledge and experience was needed. She offers one-to-one coaching to design your time outdoors the way it works for you, and group coaching to build your outdoor community for outdoor play, co-op, or forest school style learning for all ages. Thank you for joining us today, Claudine.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to dive into all of this. I get really just happy spreading this information to people. So thank you for having me.
Oh, wonderful. And I can tell that we're going to have a great time. I think our energies sort of co and sync up together. So this is going to be great. So I'd love to ask you a bit more about your passions and really about how this coaching works, because I know it's not just for teachers.
So my passion really is, deep down, I love helping others. And when I realized that something that I do comes very easily to me, I wanted to share it with others. And being a mom of three, I do homeschool my three kiddos. And I realized there were a lot of other moms looking for community, looking for groups, looking for ways to get outdoors with their kids, and not exactly always homeschooling moms. I work with moms who have kids in school too, just to kind of add to their school curriculum and have that outdoor time in a community. Because when you bring community to the outdoors, it's kind of like a double benefit.
That's a great idea, this idea of merging traditional education, and then we can also blend it with nature. So it's not, you know, if our learners aren't getting it during their school hours, it's really nice that you're there to sort of help extend the learning forward in a community sense.
Yes, and it's wonderful because when you go outdoors, there's no walls. That's one of the things I love. So you're not restricted in that sense. And the kids can really just, they can make as much sound as they want. They can create however they want. Messes are so much easier to deal with outside. So really extending the learning process, or literally just taking it from your kitchen table outside, can just change the entire experience. And it's really just magical to watch.
The one thing that really pops into my mind when you're talking about being there with the learners is I visualize you being at their same level. So as opposed to what we think about traditional teaching is this didactic form, I stand up top, it's more lecture style. And when I hear you speak, I get this picture of you being down at the level in the dirt with the kids and learning how to listen to the kids, and then learning when and how to sort of nudge their play forward.
Yes, it's absolutely exactly where I am. And it's how I coach my clients too, and the moms that I work with, is that it's really important that we hear things from their level. And there's so much we can learn from them. It's incredible. When you take the time to kind of be where they are, you can actually see nature in a completely different way because you're seeing it through their eyes. And a lot of what I do also teach is having open play, not only structured play, and allowing the children to lead. So when our group goes to the forest, we have a location that we go regularly that we get to see over the seasons, how it changes, but we follow them. Sometimes new kids will join us and they'll say, where are we going? And I'm like, show us. We can't wait to see where we're going. So it's really fun to watch them lead. And then having multi-age groups is where it just gets so magical, where the older children can really learn leadership and be able to be mentors to the younger kids. And then the younger kids have the older children to look up to as mentors, right? And they just work together. And it's just like, I'm getting goosebumps literally as we're talking, because I've been doing this for 8 years and it's just always magical all the time. And allowing the children just to have that space. Right. So I know we're going to talk a little bit about the challenges, and there are challenges for sure. So I just absolutely love talking about this, because I think it's so important for moms to understand that we don't always have to lead, and that taking the time to observe and be present and watch where the children are going and watch what they're observing, you can actually learn so much about their interests, which then help you guide them into learning other things that might be more challenging for them. So when you hit their interests, they're more prone to be able to hear the other things that might be a little more challenging for them.
And I think, as you're hinting at, it's not that you don't have a plan. You have a plan when you're going out with your learners, but you're flexible enough to say, wow, it looks like you're really interested in sticks today, or moss, or tracking. And then you're able to adapt your plan as such.
Absolutely. And that's actually what I say all the time, is the best plan is a plan that can be changed. And once you have a plan, you know where you're going, but then you can also make sure that you can change it to wherever you're going to be led, right? So really being able to take that time to be flexible will open up so much more, not only for the learners, but for the leaders, for the moms, for the parents with the children. And this gets passed on to the older children too. So I see it in my daughter, who's 12 and a half now. And, you know, she's been doing this with me since she was, oh my, like 2-3 years old. So, I mean, she's literally grown through this process of being the younger one and now being an older mentor to the younger ones, and just seeing her hold the hands of the toddlers and showing them the safety of being out in the forest and observing things with them and helping them through a puddle or building dams together and finding a way to cross the river. Like, all of these things are just, it's just magical. I don't really have another word to say other than magical, because when you sit and observe and you take that time as the leader or the teacher, the adult, and you take that time to really see it through their eyes, you will see things just so differently. And it's wonderful.
This is exactly what I wanted to ask you when you talked about your 12-year-old playing, is how does play look differently when I teach kindergarten versus someone in grade 3 versus someone that's 12 years old, like your daughter? Is the play different? Are there different challenges or different opportunities?
It is different, and it's also the same, which is amazing, because my 12-year-old will completely be 100% soaked and covered in mud, just like anyone else. But at the same time, her activity can be a little bit more high level. We often will, along with doing open free play groups, I also help create groups that have a curriculum or either play-based or art-based or have more of a structured curriculum. And when you have the same project for all of the children, and the group that I have now is age 2 through 12. Actually, we have a 13-year-old, so 2 through 13. We've had a lot of birthdays recently, but watching them, how they interact with the project, it's different, right? So if you're doing a painting project, you know, a toddler, a 2 to 4-year-old is going to paint that rock or paint that stick very differently than an older child from 10 to 13, right? There's going to be much more detail involved. When they're creating, they love to create dams and try to unclog. My girls are very into saving the forest and making sure that things can flow and that water isn't stagnant. So they will work together to create, to block these dams and stuff. So that's one of the ways that it's just the same, but every child kind of has a different level of what part they're willing to get into. But when you have a group of children, the child who might be a little bit more shy or timid to step into that kind of play will feel much more supported by their peers doing this kind of play and getting into the mud or getting into the water than if it's, you know, just one-on-one or just with their same age group. When you start exploring multi-age groups, there's a different dynamic that happens within the children that can't really happen from just one age with a teacher. It's just a different relationship.
And that leads me to wanting to ask you a bit more about how you begin your programs with these learners, because I know you're talking about starting with their comfort, not going too fast, too slow. And so for teachers that are thinking about starting up in September with a new group of students, what's the best way to slowly start introducing outdoor play with those kids?
That's really a great question to have, because I think it's very important to make sure that you are not pushing, that you are honoring their natural limitation, their limits and their boundaries for their bodies, right? They will automatically know if they're comfortable. And there's a difference between kind of pushing them to supporting them. Mm-hmm. I think also it's important to have basic safety explained so that children feel safe in their space, explaining what to expect. When we have somebody new that join in our area, we'll explain to them the trail markers. We have trail markers that we follow. We have one area that we go that's a very short walk, and then it opens up into this beautiful field, and it allows the children to have a lot of independent play because we can see them and they can go further. So choosing your location is really important to know what the level of, like, what age level they have. With our older children now, if the trail markers are there, they know how to follow the trail markers so they can go ahead of us. And we also have a call system, and this allows us to always be able to communicate with the children just in case they get too far. What I love about this is that it works anywhere. It does not just work when you're hiking. It works in your backyard. It works in your kitchen. It works in the store, anywhere that you need to kind of connect with your children. And we explain this to anybody who joins our group. So I'll explain it really quickly to you. And I'm not going to do it now because it's loud, but it's basically a very long tone sound. And it sounds like caw, but it's very loud. And it's easy to project that sound. If you do one of those, it means please respond so I know where you are. And this way, it'll give you a sense if you're not sure what direction they went. You can do a two call, which means come back. So a lot of times if they're exploring, we might need to get ready to go. That they repeat the call and they return, no questions asked. That one is very useful. And then there's a three call. This one is basically come with help. Meaning somebody is hurt, we need help. And this, we've never used this, but knowing that we have it always makes everyone feel like they have that independence and that security to kind of venture a little bit more. And of course, this comes across of what the comfort level is of the leader, of the teacher, of the parent in that case. But this allows us to kind of have that sense of communication. Now, sometimes you can just use a phone or use digital devices, but sometimes in the forest that's near us, we don't have signal. So I think it's really important to teach how to communicate without our devices so that we have that as a backup for an emergency. So this kind of has really allowed not only the children, but the parents and the moms that are in my group feel confident about allowing their children to explore.
I love it. We use a similar call sound, but we use different animals, actually. So when I want learners to come back to me at their own pace, we're just going to come back, I make a coyote howl. If I want them to come and circle up because we're going to do a bigger transition story, maybe moving to a different space, I do a chickadee call. And the chickadee call, they're allowed to repeat. The coyote call, they don't. They just come back. And then if we're all dispersed and I just want them to freeze and look at me because I've seen something really neat, and so I'll be pointing at something, I'll do an owl call. We have barred owls here, so I'll do the "who cooks for you" call. They stop, look at me, I'm pointing, and then they just get to continue on. So I find it really nice, similar to your style, that there are different calls for different reasons, and we'll practice them each at the beginning of the school year. And it's really easy for the learners to attach expected behaviors with those calls. So again, that really eases their anxiety. And we do that with different areas as well. So you were saying, you know, they know how to do the trail markers. They know how to read and assign expected behaviors there. When they're at the field, they know they're going to have some big free play. And so what I would love to do when I'm in new schools is go do a nature walk, explore the school grounds, find out what works in those different spaces, what can we name those spaces, and then we can attach our expected behaviors there. It just makes it so much easier for the kids and for the teachers.
Yes, I absolutely love this. I love your calls too. That's wonderful. And I did, I've moved about 3 years ago from one area to another. So we actually still go to both reservations, but I did spend a good 6 months with my kids basically looking at the entire reservation to find this field that had a shorter walk for younger kids with shorter legs and less stamina. And then we found another location that's one of our favorite. It's a little bit longer of a walk and it has this really nice little stream and a bridge, but it has these hills that kind of provide shelter. So in the winter, it's really nice because it blocks the wind. And in the summer, it creates this kind of cove where it's cooler. And we do have to go uphill to get back home. So that is one of the challenges that we've often had to get through. But we have a few songs that we sing to help our legs feel confident that they can get us up this hill. And I usually let parents know, bring a carrier or just be ready to help them up a little bit. But we've been walking up that hill for years now. And I think it's important to know that it can still be a challenge. Just because you get over the challenge once doesn't mean that challenge is no longer going to be something that is challenging. And as they grow, it's been a challenge for different reasons. And it's just something that we have to learn that we continue to help them get through because they're growing. They're just going to look at it in a different way. So it's not like this hill, you know, one day we sang a song and all of a sudden everybody goes up the hill, no problem, sunshines and rainbows, right? There's just different reasons that it's a challenge and we still get through them. It's all part of that learning process of overcoming those challenges and recognizing that, you know, that's part of life, right? We're going to have challenges that we're going to have to figure out how to get through. And I love watching the kids figure that out together because now my 12-year-old sings that song to my 3-year-old and it just melts my heart.
And I think that's the wonderful gift of nature is that it has all these wonderful challenges that we can rise to and the unexpected nature of what those challenges could be. Now, I know that can cause anxiety for some learners because you don't know what you're going to get, but it's really important for us as the facilitators, for lack of a better word, to model when I'm uncomfortable. I'll say it out loud. I'll bring my learners in and say, wow, we were playing great with these rocks and sticks. We were getting a little too close to the water. And my learners know that that water play is a little worrisome for me. I don't want kids slipping into this rushing river. You know, there's a lot of unknowns when it comes to water, not puddles and that sort of water, but we do have lots of pretty intense rivers where I live. And again, I think it's this notion of I'm going to say it out loud, what I'm thinking, what my plan is. I'd like to go to the water here, but I'm going to consider that this could happen. So I'll probably maybe go over there instead. And then they understand what the hazards are, what to be aware of, and sort of a backup plan.
Absolutely agree with you. I think showing our thought process through our problem solving thinking absolutely helps them figure that, how to think it through themselves. It's something I completely do also. And my kids have actually said, we really appreciate that you explain it to us, mommy, because then, you know, we understand it and the kids in the group. So yeah. And I think then they also pass it along to the younger kids, like the multi-age aspect of things is just, it's just a completely different thing. And I love it. Obviously I have a 3, 9 and a 12-year-old. So I kind of live multi-age life on a regular, but it's just wonderful to watch them in a group and working together in these ages. And I can give you another example. We have one of the projects we were doing, we were making bird feeders in the field where we love to go. And one of the kids was a little hesitant because he's not too sure about touching, you know, we were using like an oil to put the seed, like put on the sticks to then put the seeds on. And he's like, I really don't want to touch that. And all of the kids were like, that's okay, we'll help you. Where's your stick? And they worked together. And there was like four of them making this bird feeder together. And that's one of the things that I love about outdoor education. It's just, there's so much more room. There's so much more space. There's a stick for everybody. And it just allows them to just feel less boundaries so that they can easily work together in just so many other ways where they just collaborate and say, it's no problem. We'll do that for you. And when we do painting projects and, you know, not everybody has their own paint, we put out a community plates, right? So everybody has to ask for the colors that they need. And, you know, they're painting, we do a banner, our first meetup, we do a banner and they create their name if they want. And they decorate this banner that we put up in our location every time that we meet. It's kind of their way of marking their space and celebrating our group. But they all had to work together to ask for the colors they needed, wait their turn. And granted, we're age 2 to 13. Everybody still has to work on that, to take turns. When you get, you know, the older kids can get very, very focused on what they're doing and be like, but I need green, right? And I don't have green. And that can be really intense, right? But then the younger children might say, oh, hey, I have green, here you go. And there you've just shown kind of a reverse what most people would think is that the older child would be teaching the younger. But I've seen how the younger children support the older children who get so focused in that regard. So I think it's not just the older children are teaching the younger. It's just this great community aspect between the children where they support each other and learn from each other that it's just, I love sitting back and observing. There's just so much less that you need to do as the educator because they seem to just educate themselves together from what the things that they've learned and work things through, and the problem solving and the conflict resolution and all of those things just seem to be easier to figure out as soon as you're outside.
I completely agree. I am so on board with everything you're saying. And it's true. This idea of being able to sit back and not always be the one to divulge and give out the knowledge, but letting them figure it out either through problem solving, the teamwork, or figuring out where moss prefers to grow. Well, if I told you, they might not really remember, but if they go and hunt for it and search for it and observe it themselves, they're really going to internalize that learning. And then as we're sitting back and watching, as an educator, that's when I get to notice and observe and connect it to the curriculum. Wow, they were just researching. They were just looking up information in a field guide. They were just using nonfiction writing in their nature journal to record all these observations. They were just counting one to one on the pine cones. So there's so many areas that we can make legitimate, valid curricular connections while they are doing this unstructured or even structured play.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the great things is that it's the learning just becomes so fluid. Right? It's just something that happens. And there's just little things that we can add to their experience that then increases their skills in so many other subjects. And it's, like I said, magical in that sense. And how the way you were saying, how you can just bring something into what they're already doing. And with the journals, one of the things that we actually incorporated through because of the pandemic and remote learning. And when we would go out and go to the forest, we would actually do a Zoom call the next day. And the kids would sit and we would talk about what they experienced, what they saw, and they would journal. And I would read books. So we had different subjects we were learning and I would read the books, and because they're journaling and they would absorb so much, and you would think, oh, they're coloring, they're doodling, they're creating, they're not really listening. But then all of a sudden I'd be reading and I'm three paragraphs in, and then a head would pop up and be like, wait, can you explain that? oh, I remember that, right? So I'm like, they are listening. They absolutely are. And because their creative brain is so, right, it's like right. how the brain works in conjunction. So they're allowed to doodle. They're allowed to sit there and journal. Sometimes they create these amazing sculptures, but they are absorbing so much more that when I'm reading, they are actually telling me all the facts from these books that we're reading. Over the weeks, they'll catalog something from like months ago. Sorry for the sirens. Apparently there's something going on in the background here. Yeah, so I just find it so incredible when that aspect of remembering what they did yesterday, it brings it, the fact that they're bringing that back to their memory, talking about it, discussing it, and seeing how they then create their journal from the same experience. They will journal something totally different. Mm-hmm. And then they talk about how it's different along while I'm reading. So what will happen is they'll be journaling while I'm reading. And then when I'm done reading, we'll talk about what they journaled and how, what they want to share about their experience the day before. And it's just, it's so wonderful to see how they collaborate. And they're like, oh, I remember when you did that. Oh, I remember that tree. And it just brings all of the magic back.
Well, and it's all scaffolded and intertwined into one another. So nothing is now separate in your program. You're finding a way to have everything flow from one thing to the next and making connections. And so I can imagine how deep that learning is for your learners.
It's really wonderful. And I just love seeing the kids enjoy it. They enjoy it so much. Mm-hmm. And that just means so much to me because they're enjoying learning. Right. I love learning and I love seeing kids who enjoy learning. And that's what's really it's about, because if you enjoy learning, you could learn anything.
I would love to now ask you a bit about some of the challenges that you often find when you're outdoors with play, with weather.
Yeah. So there's definitely challenges. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times there can be the difference of speed. So the older kids might want to go faster than the younger kids, trying to keep the group together, the younger kids wanting to keep up with the older kids. How do you manage giving the older kids that time that they want, right? So that's where, you know, you have to kind of step in and facilitate that and allow the older kids to have that time and help the younger kids understand, give them something else that they can do so they don't feel like they're missing out. My three-year-old constantly has that issue of fearing like he's missing out with his sisters, but it's also part of learning, right? And understanding that, okay, they're doing that. We're going to do this and let's see how we can then, and then bringing everyone together and talking about their different experiences so that they can understand that they can do different things and still come back together. We love all weather. We are out all year long. And, you know, obviously in the winter, we might not be out for as many hours, but we definitely get out in the winter. We actually love the winter a lot. So, but, you know, I think gear is really important. And it's something I talk about and a lot. And having the right gear can extend your play so much and allow you to experience things that you normally would not have if you were not geared up for the cold, for the rain, or for the heat, you know, all of that. One of the things, I mean, my kids, when it rains, my kids are outside the moment it starts to rain. They're not inside. They just run outside. But, you know, I would say one of the bigger challenges is cold rain, mm-hmm. which can be really hard. But I think if you know how to layer underneath and have the right rain gear and you're prepared for it and manage your expectations on a cold, rainy day, you're not going out for 3 hours. It's not going to happen. But on a cold, rainy day, if you're like, I'm going to get out for a half an hour and we're going to just splash around the puddles and see what's happening and what's going on, you might be pleasantly surprised that you're out for an hour, mm-hmm. right? So I think managing those expectations is really important, knowing how to handle the elements, and then just realizing that it's okay if you're only out for a little bit, but at least you got to experience that weather.
Exactly. And as you said, managing the expectations for each weather and having that mindset that all those elements are a gift and they can each teach us something different when we're outside.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So sadly, I think our time is coming to an end. So I do want to make sure that I have enough time to ask you about a novelty nature note. So today I'm going to share about honeybees because they are everywhere right now. And I've been reading with my little ones about how that they are the only insect that produces food eaten by humans, and that they're known to fly up to 25 kilometers an hour, which is unbelievable. Wow. So careful in school zones because those honeybees are zooming down.
That's amazing. That's great.
Is there any type of fun nature fact you'd like to share with us today?
Yes, I would like to actually share something that I learned from the research I did in my recent Benefits of the Outdoors. I did a lot of research for 11 benefits to get outdoors, and one of them was all about your immune system. And I found out that there is this chemical, this airborne chemical that plants produce, phytoncides. And I loved researching this. I loved learning how to say it also, phytoncides. But phyton means plant, inside means exterminate. So this is how plants actually produce this chemical to protect themselves from harmful insects, bacteria, and fungi, right? Great, smart plants. However, when we breathe in phytoncides, it helps increase the level of our white blood cells, which helps us increase our ability to fight off disease and infection. So it's like nature is literally like hand in hand working together here. And I just like blew my mind. I was like, that's amazing. So this was kind of one of my favorite research parts of the 11 benefits. And I did a whole bunch of reels and videos on them on my Instagram. It was really fun to film and the kids got involved. It was really one of my more exciting projects that I've done recently.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And now actually, I would love to go back and rewatch those reels. So for those of you who aren't following you, could you tell us a bit about how we can find out more about your work and your business and how to follow you on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on Instagram at Outdoor Play Connection. My website is outdoorplayconnection.com. And I offer one-on-one coaching to help design your time outdoors, along with group coaching, where I will help you set up your own group for co-op or free play, multi-age groups. And I actually have one of those groups getting started in August. So I'll be doing that. It's a group program where we get you started in 8 weeks and you'll have a group that you can lead on your own, and you'll have my support the whole way through so that you can have your community grow and build over time.
Yeah, that's so important. Thank you so much for taking the time to sort of illustrate the magic, as you put it, the magic of outdoor play, because it is absolutely amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. This was just so fun. And I love talking about this because it is magical and I want everyone to be able to experience it.
I do too. And I have a feeling there might be a part two with you and I coming up in the next few months. So
thank I would love
that. Everyone for coming and joining us. And if you have any questions, please reach out through www.mentoringnatureconnections.ca. And until next time, go get your hands dirty and have fun with mentoring your own nature connections.